This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A protest in Washington, D.C. by students after the Supreme Court rules that President Biden's student loan forgiveness program is unconstitutional under the HEROES Act. Mr. Biden says his administration is finding a new way to provide student loan debt relief under the Higher Education Act.
First, I'm announcing today a new path consistent with today's ruling to provide student debt relief to as many borrowers as possible, as quickly as possible.
CBS's Major Garrett with details on another case the Supreme Court ruled on before ending its term.
The Supreme Court's conservative majority also prevailed on a case pitting free speech against gay rights. Lori Smith, a web designer from Colorado, wanted to create specialized web pages for weddings, but not for same-sex couples, arguing doing so would violate her First Amendment rights.
I'm a Christian. I believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, and I want to create messages that are consistent with that faith.
In a 6-3 opinion, the court sided with Smith, ruling that her free speech rights superseded state anti-discrimination laws.
Hollywood actors have supported writers during their 2-month-long strike, but soon the actors may walk their own picket line. Members of the Screen Actors Guild are threatening to strike unless an agreement is reached with major studios by midnight tonight. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti speaks with media analyst Paul Dergarabedian.
One sticking point is streaming. The major platforms have raked in billions, while actors were paid a lower rate.
In the past, the monies that were earned by actors and writers was pretty direct. But now with streaming, it's a different model. And now I think everyone's scrambling to deal with these new financial and technological advancements.
Artificial intelligence is another big issue.
More unrest across France after a teenager is shot to death by police. Young rioters have had clashes with police and there has been looting. France's president has asked parents to keep their children at home. Homer Hoags, believed to be one of the last surviving Tuskegee Airmen, has died in Texas. Hoags' daughter Barbara says her father had not told her until 2009 that he was in the unit of Black Army Air Force pilots and support personnel during World War II.
I called the national chapter. They told us to send in his paperwork. They sent back that, yes, he's a documented original Tuskegee Airman. I said, wow. So then when we found out that, he was our double hero.
Homer Hoags died just 2 days after his wife of 70 years. He was 96. And Apple becomes the first publicly traded company valued at $3 trillion. This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in Western Wisconsin. I'm Jimmy Cuska. The Wisconsin DNR is reminding people to be safe this holiday weekend if you're out on the trails by making sure you're using the right equipment when driving your ATV or UTV.
Helmets save lives. I've been to countless scenes where a helmet has saved an individual's life, no doubt. And with UTVs, there's seatbelts for a reason.
That's Marcus Medina of the DNR. So far this year, Wisconsin has had 13 fatal crashes involving an ATV or UTV. 21 people died in ATV or UTV crashes last year. With the 4th of July weekend upon us, local law enforcement officials are reminding people to be safe when using fireworks. Most cities have ordinances against fireworks that leave the ground or explode, and those come with costly fines. If you are setting off fireworks, be sure to keep them away from things that easily catch on fire and have access to water nearby. A public safety commission says nearly 200 people go to the ER each day around the 4th for firework-related injuries. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today. 855-954-1186.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson and Fox. GTWLawyers.com.
Welcome Welcome to the Main Street Cafe. You are in Bloomer, a few miles north of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. A small town, 3,000 people. But there are big things happening at the cafe.
Every year, on the average of about 150,000
pies. 150,000
pies
and more than 65 varieties made, sold, and enjoyed here. But can you guess which is the most popular pie choice in Wisconsin? Apple, cherry, or pumpkin? The answer coming up.
Most of it's made by hand. The taste, the flavor. We use real Wisconsin dairy products.
Real dairy products, including free ice cream on your pie and free refills of milk. It's something cafe owner Donnie Stoik likes to brag about.
The horn I like to toot. We do that every day, not just during June.
As we wrap up our celebration of June Dairy Month, did you guess? Cherry pie is the Wisconsin favorite, according to Instacart. Now we want to know yours and who makes it. Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. 93.5 The Tap. This is 93.5 The Tap.
To today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank-approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Gotta tell you, my favorite Twitter picture of the day is Sam Alito and his wife. I guess his wife's name is Martha Ann. Good for Martha Ann. But evidently, Sam and Martha Ann with Leonard Leo in Versailles in France. I can't even say that right. But there they are, bright smiley faces. And why not? Because of the Leonard Leo types of the world. We've got Alito on the court. We've got Gorsuch. We've got Kavanaugh. We've got the Coney Barrett woman. We've got crazy. And there they are smiling because, it bought and paid for. But hey, the only reason Sam went, seat was empty. Nobody else was going to go. I was doing him a favor. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the craziness. And look, if you were surprised, as I said at the beginning, if you were shocked by today's rulings, you ain't been paying attention or you ain't been listening to my next guest, who is the afternoon guy at KTNF AM 950 in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Matt McNeil. Thanks for taking time for us, buddy.
Hey, Rick. How are you doing, my friend?
I am good. I want to start with this idea that, I was listening to some right-wing bloviators going on about the left is losing their minds and the left is... I guess I didn't see people on the left really losing their minds. We all knew it was coming.
Well, I'll tell you what. I can only imagine the lavish, top-notch vacations that some Supreme Court justices are about to take because they have delivered. Oh, and how is it that easy? Hey, I'll get you to where we'll get the line cutter at Disney World. And, all you have to do is make sure college is free for low-income individuals. If that's all we have to do, I'll take Gorsuch to Disney World in a heartbeat, man. We'll go have a blast and save a lot of people money. You and I, we see this every day, and we're talking to a lot of people. I sat up all night, election night 2016, because I kept saying to myself, what have you done?
Yep.
What have you done? Because it wasn't just this will be a little bit different. I knew exactly what was coming down the line. And there was not much you could do about it. And this is the end result. I mean, when you're talking the Supreme Court, the inertia effect of it is not within the first few years. It's for a decade or two down the road. That is why you can no longer take any elections off. I know there are people out there who are like, well, Matt, I don't want to hear about how, the people that didn't vote for Hillary in 2016, it's what it is. And if we didn't learn our lesson, we should know it now, that if you have any doubt, I don't care who it is, you vote Democrat, end of story, end of discussion, because it's insanity on the other side, and they're seeing they're enjoying their spoils right now with that corrupted Supreme Court.
Yeah, and the thing that gets me, Matt, and this is the part that I'm still struggling with, you know, I had a bunch of people emailing me and saying, you know, basically celebrating and showing me the palm to my face, and these are working class people. These are people just like you and me. And I'm going, I don't know why you're celebrating. You didn't win anything. None of these decisions are going to help you put food on the table, help you to keep a roof over your head, to get your kids through college. None of this. This doesn't help the working class at all, other than, you know, for a couple of minutes, you got to kick somebody who was down. You got to say, hey, I agree with them because they hate the same people. But it's not going to make your life any better.
No, it's not. And that is the... You know, if you want to look at the success of Republicans on one front, it's the ability to convince people to vote against their best intention, to get them to do it with aplomb, with glee, with joy, that, oh, you're not going to give me health insurance. You're not going to give me good quality education for my kids. You're not going to build my roads or invest in the infrastructure. You're not going to help out the American farmer. You're against workers. Oh, I'll vote for you. And there is just an insanity that is existing out there, the brainwashing of this portion of America, about a third of the country, to where people can sit there and say, I'm going to shoot your dog, and they'll say, great, do it, I'll vote for you. And that's the crazy part of it. I mean, the insanity of individuals who basically can, yeah, I mean, take a look, everything that's wrong in, let's go, it's rural America. Everything that's wrong in rural America is because of Republicans. They have screwed you over consistently. If you're a farmer, you're in rural America, there's no housing, there's no childcare, your schools are bad, there's no investment, your downtowns are empty. Why? Because of Republicans. And the Democrats, we're in Minnesota, you've heard about what we've been doing over here. We're throwing a ton of money out there into these rural areas, and still these people are like, oh yeah, that's going to help me, but I don't care because I'd rather die than vote Democrat. And I don't know how, I mean, right now I'm encouraging the Minnesota Democrats to get into every one of these small towns and put up billboards in every town saying every road, every school, every airport, every investment that we have made, you need to make sure these people know that didn't come from Republicans, that came from the Democrats.
No, I've been saying that from the beginning, Matt. I mean, you need giant 20-foot cardboard cutouts of Joe Biden going, I did that. In every rural community where we're investing in broadband, where the roads are getting better, all of that, you're spot on.
Well, and you brought up the broadband. I mean, what a monumental little thing that just happened last week. Where, I mean, and you and I have been out in rural America. You go some of these places, they still can't get cell phone service. Kid has to do homework. They got to go drive 30 minutes to a Caribou Coffee or a Starbucks coffee and go and do their homework there. The idea of going border to border broadband, I mean, that's FDR. We're going to bring electricity to rural America. That's what that is. In Minnesota, we're going to get $641 million to go border to border with broadband in Minnesota. That is going to dramatically help people. And the Democrats they can't just sit there. They like to sit there and say, we don't have to brag. No, brag, because Republicans are already taking credit for this.
Yeah.
And they didn't do this. So you need to get out there and brag, because if you don't go tell people that you're doing it, the Republicans will insist, well, we did it, even though they voted against it.
No, and I keep saying, you know, imagine, just come with me in this Wayback Machine. Imagine if Donald Trump had a quarter of the accomplishments that the Biden administration has had so far. Just imagine if they actually did, oh, I don't know, anything. Imagine the kind of hero worship. Imagine the kind of credit Trump would want. He would break both arms trying to pat himself on the back and tweet with his toes about how wonderful he is.
Well, you know, the Republicans are amazing when it comes to Trump, because, you know, he didn't do a damn thing. But they still, have you noticed the trend of Republicans where what they'll do is they know they have got a cesspool of a guy that they love. They love him because he enables them. He allows their worst instincts to bubble over and be part of their psyche. It's who they are. They love him for that, and they will follow him into the pits of hell because of that. That is who they are. So to convince themselves that they're really on the right side, they will convince themselves that the other side are demon vampire zombies who are going to eat my brain. Well, hey, Donald Trump's not the best guy, but he's not a demon vampire zombie. And, you know, it's like that's when you got to get to that level of, my God, not even UPN would put that show on the air. You know, it really is kind of remarkable. But that's who these people are. They're so desperate for... A lot of his followers, I'll just say it, I think are 20-time losers. People that can't get out of their own way, who are upset with their life and they're mad about things. And they keep voting for people that make their lives worse. But as opposed to fix their lives, it's easier for them to just blame other people. And Donald Trump was the guy that came out and told them, you can do that. Yeah. And you can be racist and you can be a bigot and you can do that. And they loved him because all of a sudden they were no longer the 20-time loser. They were the hero of their own story. And that is a very difficult thing to shake people out of. But the reality is you got to, because this country will devolve into something we have never seen before if he ever gets close to the White House again.
And the thing that I have is, it's not even just him. It's this thinking. It's what's been set up. I mean, our Supreme Court is completely off the rails. There is no such thing as decided law anymore. There is nothing that they aren't willing to overturn or create out of whole cloth. And I look at the website, you know, situation. Evidently, I know gay people can't have cake or websites now, but you know. Evidently, nobody actually asked for the website. Actually, there's no victim here. There's no harm here. They just decided to take this because, well, some gay person might ask for a website.
Exactly. It's a completely fabricated case that it's remarkable. How about the other case today? I mean, they're half their ruling in the denying of the relief for student loan debt. Was, we just don't want to. half their ruling was, we just don't want to do it. And we should note here, as people sit there and say, well, you know, Roberts is not that bad, or, you know, sometimes Kavanaugh and Gorsuch seems to come around on Native American issues and stuff like that. That was 6-3 yesterday, 6-3, 6-3 again today. And now they're thinking about taking on whether or not people who are, violent people who are abusing their wives, their spouses, their girlfriends, whether or not they should be able to have guns. They have a right to have a gun, even though they are a domestic abuser. Yeah. I mean, that is it. This is the inertia, folks. This is what happens when you say to yourself, oh, I'm not going to vote this election because I've convinced myself of an impossibility, that Hillary Clinton was somehow going to be worse than Donald Trump. And you bask in that. And I want to remind people that after that election in 2016, there was a lot of people that could not pat themselves on the back enough to say, see, we sent a message. Yeah, that message is, you're idiots, because this is what we're getting today. And this is the beginning. I mean, these last few years, I mean, the ending of Roe v. Wade, the ending of affirmative action, for goodness sakes, you know, the consequences that we're seeing here, it's going to take decades to undo all this damage. The one good side, I can tell you what, Generation Z wants nothing to do with Republicans. They have, I mean, if you're 30 and younger in this country, the Republican Party is persona non grata. They are not going to go for you. And I think this is kind of one of the reasons why they're kind of entertaining this overthrowing the democracy thing, is because they can see the cab coming down the street with its doors wide open, that they basically can't, they're not going to be able to win the younger generation. And the baby boomers are dying off, tragically, and the greatest generation is almost gone. And that's been their loyal base. And that loyal base is disappearing and quickly, while this new base of very loyal Democratic voters, which are being encouraged by Republican actions, they are coming in and they are they're going to make a difference, a big difference.
No, I'm right there with you. And again, as you said, you know, the reality is, you know, this is why they want to overturn democracy. This is why they're doing what they're doing. It is what it is. I quick want to take a phone call. Let's get CJ from Madison on line one. CJ, how you doing?
I am good. Thanks for taking my call, Rick.
Yeah, you're welcome. Go ahead, real quick.
Well, my question is, do you believe?
Oh, I've decided I'm not going to discriminate against you because discrimination's legal. Evidently, this is the route we're going. Sorry. I got a problem. I got some discrimination going on here. Sorry, this is an inside thing. But you know, this is a perfect place because the website case again to me is interesting because, you know, yesterday it was all about, hey, you know, we've ended discrimination, and today discrimination's okay.
Well, I will say that. Oh, and that was that CJ from Madison.
Yeah.
Oh, I've chatted with him. Tell him his mom says hi. Anyway, I'm that kind of guy. Here's what I'll say. The Supreme Court, the same Supreme Court said, you can factor race completely into criminal profiling. Yep, race is 100% legit, and you can profile the living daylights out of people just because of their race. But you can't go down there and help people who are... And when you talk about affirmative action, I can't tell you the great lie Republicans tell themselves to make affirmative action irrelevant is that everyone has the same opportunity. And that is such an ludicrous, outrageous statement that the same people in the wealthiest of suburbs in any community, those kids have the same education, the same opportunities, the same health care, the same food, the same transportation, the same quality of life as kids in inner cities and poorer communities. It's not true. And I've been in the South where they have systematically gone out there and damaged the public education system purposely to basically hurt the minority population and prevent them from getting a quality education. And yet we still, every single year, get kids that go through these fixed systems and come on out with 4.0s, grade point averages, and they go to try to go to a college, but because daddy's got an alumni exemption, they can't get in. And so it's the affirmative action is needed because systemic racism is a problem. And just because you don't want it to be a problem doesn't mean it's not a problem. I'm so upset with you know, Clarence Thomas. I mean, talk about a guy. I mean, it was like when Paul Ryan, stuff like in Madison, Wisconsin, Paul Ryan, when he was a Speaker of the House, who was taking Social Security benefits when he was a kid because of his circumstance, and then saying he wants to cut them off for everyone else. Clarence Thomas would not have gotten his legal degrees if not for affirmative action. He was given an opportunity because people looked at the system and said, the system is not fair. We're going to make sure that you get the equal opportunity that other people can get. And he was able to get it. And now he's saying, I got mine, screw you. Yeah. It is so disappointing to see, but that's where we're at. This is ideology. And let's not mistake the opening point. These guys are bought and paid for, and somehow it's simply just give them a 5-star holiday vacation, fly them across the globe, get them the all you can eat pass. I mean, they will sell out anything on the planet as long as they can do this. And that is the disturbing part.
Yeah, I see that. Now, I think this is a little different with the Supreme Court. You know, these trips, I don't think these trips mattered at all. I don't think there's a quid pro quo at all in this, because Alito, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, Coney Barrett, they don't get on the Supreme Court without having been vetted from high school forward. They're in the club. They've been wined and dined and indoctrinated for decades. One little trip to Versailles or one little trip to Alaska, that doesn't mean anything then. And that's what Alito was trying to say in his pre-buttal. You know, this isn't going to change my mind. You know, the seat was empty. I was doing them a favor kind of thing. It's who they are, and it's the reason that, you know, the infrastructure that creates these people are so dangerous that most Americans don't even know exists. The most powerful guy in this country, a guy named Leonard Leo, he's the guy who, during the Trump years, was picking out all of these horrible judges. You don't think Donald Trump was up nights doing research, do you?
Oh, no. I will say this. There, when it comes to Justice Scalia or Justice Thomas's little Nazi friend or Nazi fan, not I mean, he's just a big fan of the Nazis. Now, I don't know what his actual personal beliefs are. One of those flights really put up a huge red flag for me. I don't know if you saw the list of flights that was exposed, but one, he left Washington D.C. I think he flew to Pennsylvania for like 1 hour, and then flew back to Washington D.C. If that's not going there and taking marching orders. I don't know what it is. He is, refuses, obviously, still refuses to say what any of that was about. But one of those flights was not a vacation. It was a summoning. And he was summoned. A Supreme Court justice seemed to have been summoned to his Nazi-loving benefactor's appearance and then immediately flew back to Washington, D.C. How you can't start an investigation on that one flight alone, I don't know. But it's you know, you're completely right, Rick, in that this is born and bred through college, through, you know, going to certain law firms, going to certain clerking, going to this, they're put through the system. But what's going on is making sure that we don't get another Sandra Day O'Connor, where you put her on the court. They thought she was a conservative voice and she ends up voting with the liberals on a lot more cases than they liked. Now it's basically like, okay, we'll let you go one or two this way or that way, but overall, we're going to make sure you understand these are the cases you are going to vote for.
No, and the important part of this is, you know, I've been talking about this for a while. The difference between the Trump kind of corruption and the, you know, what Trump would do and the McConnell kind of corruption. You got the Trump stuff, which is stupid, which is, you know, daring us to hold him accountable. But the McConnell stuff, much more methodical, much more backroom, much more dangerous. The stealing of a Supreme Court justice, you know, that's a big part of this. But all of that backroom, hey, the moneyed interests are really in control, and we're going to make sure they stay in control. All of these rulings to me, especially the affirmative action thing. You know, you're talking about, you know, they want us to focus on white and black when the reality is it's really about green.
What Trump really did was give them the opportunity to put out whatever the far right zealots that are pulling the strings to go out there with their wish list and do whatever they wanted to do. McConnell, McCain, these guys, they were sure they're part of the system, but they weren't dumb enough to basically allow things to go down so far where it makes them unelectable. And don't get me wrong, we have enough gerrymandered districts, Marjorie Taylor Greene, that basically they could run a turnip with an R next to its name and it would still win. But when you look at what's going on now, Trump basically said the howler monkeys have taken over the zoo. And that's where you're at. You basically have people who are unintelligent, who are unorganized, who basically only seem to exist to fall and bask in the glory of the 50 or so Twitter trolls that follow them and think that they're great. And that's where this is going. And of course, then you have this behind the curtain machinations of these people who have, you know, great white whales they've wanted to kill, and they're able to do so because there's no one driving the ship right now because Trump is over there eating a tub of paste.
Well, yeah, I now I got an image in my head. That is going to stick with me. But, you know, I was thinking of, as you were talking, I was thinking about Dwight David Eisenhower. He wrote a letter to his brother Edgar and said, you know, anyone who'd come out against Social Security or Medicare or unemployment or labor laws or the farm bill, they'd never be heard from in our political history. There are a few, you know, Texas oil millionaires, Howard Hunt, you know, but their numbers are negligible and they are stupid. And I look at that quote and I go, man, if you could dig up Ike right now and show him what's going on, he would agree. Stupid is running this country. The idiots have taken over, as you said. So I guess the question I want to finish up in is, okay, we see all this. It's right in front of us. What do you do?
You vote every election. There is no election. I don't care if it's a local municipal election, your school board, your local House and Senate member or Assembly member, whatever you have, your U.S. House members, your Senate members, your presidential races, every stinking one of these counts. And if you ever sit these out, they're going to put a bunch of psychopaths in there that are going to basically drive that cab off the cliff. And so this has happened. The only way you can fix it is by voting. And if you don't vote, then God have mercy on us all.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, you keep hearing this. We got to vote. We got to vote. We got to vote. And yet I keep having the same people going, well, you know, I don't like the candidate. And look, I fall into that sometimes, too. I was not fond of Hillary. I voted for her because I knew what the alternative was. At some point, you got to know how bad the other side is going to be. And Republicans have shown us they want to burn the house down.
I'm not the biggest fan of Arby's beef and cheddars, too. But when the other option is an actual crap sandwich, I'll take the beef and cheddar. Not my first choice, but I'll eat that because I'd rather have that than the actual crap sandwich. Arby's.
I hope you get the residual out of that. But Matt, I appreciate the time. Excellent talk with you. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Anytime, Rick. You're always welcome on my show too, and all my best, my friend.
Love talking with you, Matt McNeil. He is the afternoon guy at AM 950 KTNF in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Definitely tune in. A good guy. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to the crowd. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. This day in labor history, the year was 1885. That was the day that streetcar workers went out on strike. The West Division Street Railroad Company had reduced the number of trips it made each day. The workers asked for a wage increase to make up for the loss of earnings. In response, management fired 15 union leaders. Outraged members of the city's labor movement rallied to the cause of the West Side Streetcarmen's Benevolent Association. Thousands of Chicagoans lined the company's tracks. Calls went out to revoke the company's charter. Mayor Harrison urged the company not to try and run their cars in the charged environment. But the company's management refused to listen. They demanded police protection to get their streetcars running. A police captain by the name of John Bonfield was assigned the task. Bristling with policemen, 10 streetcars rolled out into the crowd. Under Bonfield's orders, the police clubbed strikers and protesters along the tracks. When a group of bricklayers yelled rats at the passing cars, they were arrested. In all, 150 protesters went to jail that day. After 7 days, the strike ended in a compromise. The workers saw an increase in their wages, and all but two of the workers who had been fired got their jobs back. The action propelled Captain Bonfield's career as a strikebreaker. He became known as Captain Blackjack Bonfield. It was Captain Bonfield who led the police confrontation with workers at a rally the next year that sparked the Haymarket tragedy.
Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two.
In Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Humpty Dumpty scornfully declares that when I use a word, it means just what I choose it to mean. So what does woke mean? It's become the pet political aspersion that today's kooky right-wing hucksters hurl at liberals. But the hurlers would be whopper-jawed to learn that it was actually coined by and for progressives. Indeed, it admonishes people to be awake to the dangers posed by hate-filled bigots and reactionaries like today's right-wing extremists. Surprising historical tidbit. The first person reported to have used the word was Huddy Ledbetter, the legendary black blues artist known as Leadbelly. Among his many classic songs was Scottsboro Boys, about 9 black teenagers falsely accused in 1931 of raping 2 Alabama white women. As a black musician who traveled the back roads of the Jim Crow South, Leadbelly warned others to pay attention when in a viciously racist state. Best stay woke, he cautioned. But out of blind ignorance, blind arrogance, or both, today's adapters of the Jim Crow mentality have perverted common sense wokeness into a verbal whip to lash African Americans, immigrants, Democrats, women, LGBTQ people, and all others they don't like. Pretty much everyone who looks, thinks, prays, and acts different from them. How kooky? They've declared librarians, science, Mickey Mouse, and Bud Light to be their evil enemies. Don't be woke, they bark, demanding autocratic, plutocratic, and theocratic laws to coerce compliance with their own retrogressive bigotries. This is Jim Hightower saying, bear in mind that this is no longer a fringe cult, but the mainstream of the Republican Party, including its top congressional leaders, presidential wannabes, and state officials. Actually, you can easily comprehend what these Humpty Dumpties really mean by their Don't Be Woke war cry. Just substitute the word sane for woke.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Evidently, Nikki Haley in her pointy shoes. She believes that Republicans should absolutely impeach Joe Biden. Don't know why yet. You know, not sure why. There's a whistleblower who's made some allegations. Again, I'll believe it when they put it in front of one of those people wearing the robe and putting the hand on the book. When they swear to tell the truth, then I'll buy into it. Then I'll look at your evidence. If you're going on a Fox radio show, you've lost me. Not the place for it. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. A little something may happen today. We'll figure it out. That's why I've asked my good friend Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob's a former Ohio congressman and political analyst, and to be one of the really bright guys on the political scene. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So a little something happened today in the Supreme Court. Any thoughts?
Yeah, a little something has happened a couple of days now, huh, in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, are you surprised by it? I mean, honestly, you know, I was listening to some right-wing bloviators going on about, you know, the left and Democrats, they're losing their minds. I'm going, who's losing their minds? You knew it was coming.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can see the reaction to this is not like the complete end of the world. I mean, this is not like a Roe v. Wade reaction, okay? Now, yes, there's people that feel stronger about this. But when you look at the same-sex couples, then the court pitted the LGBTQ community against the, quote, religious community and the free speech, you know, enthusiasts, let's put it that way, on that one. The Biden student loan, on that one, I'm a little torn, not the issue of student loan, although I think that whole issue personally needs deeper conversations about costs of school than just the student loan. I mean, we need to have a serious look, you know, of when I went to college and could work and could actually pay tuition versus somebody would have to work nine jobs today to pay, you know, in-state tuition at Ohio State, for example. But anyway, on that, it's an executive order of Biden, which would have been one of the most expensive executive orders. And the reason I mention that, these executive orders and signings, which nobody talks about signings, they're really bad. We can get into that one day. But the executive orders have been going on and on and on through many presidents. And what it kind of says is that Congress needs to battle some of these things out. You know, they need to codify, as we would say.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, the reality is the reason that a lot of these executive orders happen is because Congress is ineffective. They're simply not able to legislate. And we can't get anything done right now. So if you're the president and go, look, my administration's got an agenda. The only way forward is to use these executive orders and these signing statements. And look, I'm with you. I'm against this kind of unitary executive or whatever they were talking about during the Bush years. I'm against consolidating power into one branch of government. And right now it seems like the Supreme Court has all the power.
Right. And so that's why these are going to have to be, you know, looked at. Now, the affirmative action, something I think if people read the articles, I think is going to probably shock them, is the fact that, and I don't know how this can be, what I'm about to say. They were trying to look at, you know, how many colleges consider race, right? Now, here was the answer to this. And the answer to it is that the government doesn't know how colleges do this.
Right.
There's no transparency on this.
It's all subjective.
So when you want to look at the impact of what it will do, you have to look at a 2019 study where it showed that 4 of 10 colleges use race. And of course, the ones that mainly were looking at race were of the quote Ivy League level. A lot of the colleges simply weren't anyway, which is surprising. Now they're going to create probably questions. What? How were you raised? What type of background did you have? Now, Asian Americans brought this 10 years ago as a result of, I think it was Harvard. And so it was brought by Asian Americans. Now, that doesn't mean the entire Asian American community likes this decision, but that's who brought the suit further. But it was also instigated by, I think we have to look at it, Edward Blum, a man that is a conservative, about 63-year-old activist that looks for people that will latch their names onto cases. So, and he's with AEI, American, you know, Enterprise.
American Enterprise Institute.
Right. So we need to kind of point out who was behind this, because all the articles, all they say is Asian Americans. That's all you see in the articles. They don't mention him.
Fascinating. How I see this is, look, there aren't an awful lot of colleges that the majority of people can't get into. I mean, your Ivy League schools are very competitive. They have limited number of spots. But for the most part, most places are taking everybody. You've got open enrollment.
Right.
So they're not going through this process of weeding people out. It's the top universities. And, I looked, I wanted to know, since Harvard was in this, I wanted to know what the demographics, at Harvard are. And I was surprised to find out that, 34% of the student body is white. 21% mm-hmm. of the student body is Asian, and just 6% mm-hmm. is Black. And then it goes down from there into smaller percentages, after that. But I'm going, if this is how they're choosing their student body, if you're a white guy, you might want to hold on to this, because it might be you at someday.
Right. And the other thing is the lack of transparency on this, which is what the articles brought out. Now, the articles aren't pontificating on it, which they should. The United States government, as we speak right now, before the Supreme Court decision, had no concept what colleges were doing what, which it blows my mind. I have been fired from one job in my life, by the way. And I was fired in 1975. You're a Clevelander. I don't know if you remember Paul Haggard, the councilman in Cleveland.
I do, not.
Paul Haggard fired me. Paul Haggard was African-American, and he fired me. I was an equal employment opportunity investigator for construction state of Ohio. And I was fired, and he told me right to my face, because I would not alter a report against a very big construction company who were not complying with equal opportunity employment. So I was fired. I wasn't fired for writing a report that told the truth about their lack of affirmative action. I was fired because I wouldn't write a report he wanted me to write.
You were fired for insubordination. You didn't listen.
Oh, that's exactly what he told me. He said, take it. You know the governor. You'll be okay. Immediately, I went to his superior to say, I was fired by Mr. Haggard, ironically, because I wouldn't write a report that cleared the company. Anyway. So that was my little experience. But one thing I learned when I was an EEO investigator is this, and it's the key to a lot of things. It's not about quotas. And that's where I'm wondering, did these colleges institute quotas? Okay, we got 6 here. We got 10 there. It's about affirmative action. And so I think of anything in this whole thing, at least there should be transparency on decisions. I was just shocked that there isn't.
Yeah, no. Look. I'm against the idea if I'm writing it in paper, I'm against the whole idea of giving one person an advantage over another. I've been raised to believe in this idea of the person who's the best for the job should get it. But I also realize that in the real world, the stuff that's on a piece of paper never works. Yeah, we're not a utopian society. Discrimination happens. Roadblocks are put in the way. People have different advantages, invisible capital that others don't have. There's a lot that goes into this. There's no simple talking point that fixes it for me.
That's correct. And that's why I don't think there will be, the furor as there was. And this has nothing to do with white or black or minority or non-minority. I just don't think the furor will be out there, because you made a great point when you opened this whole line of conversation, which is, people basically, for the most part, in the quote non-Ivy League schools, are being admitted.
Yeah, I mean, because they want the money. I mean, the reality is colleges, and it takes us back to the student debt problem. You know, these colleges are dying for money because there's so many of these for-profit, private universities that have popped up that are sucking so many resources out. We should be talking about that more than anything else. But for me, this I don't know. They're going to take away this minor, very small, that may have affected a handful of people, but we left the legacy stuff in place where George W. Bush, who couldn't get into Texas, was able to get into Harvard and Yale? Seriously?
Right.
That's
right.
My
legacy's
problem.
Legacy's there.
It's crazy. I mean, I go back to, nobody should be surprised by what happened today. These cases... You would ask me, 6 months ago, I would have predicted exactly where we are, because this is the court that we have, and this is why elections have consequences.
When it comes, to presidential appointments to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. No, I look at this website case, and I'm sure you saw the website case.
Yes.
That evidently nobody wanted a website. There's no one who's actually been harmed, that they just took this and I guess made up a crisis and the court took it. I'm struggling with this stuff, man. I'm struggling with the ideology taking over. Look, if you're truly harmed, if you're truly aggrieved, there should be a remedy, but this just looked like trouble. So it tells me there's no law that's on the books that isn't on the auction block.
Right. And also, again, I pointed out Edward Blum because you don't see him in articles. And there's other Edward Blums. But these are people that find people, they back cases, they like to take these cases to Supreme Court, and they find, people or groups to do it. And of course, then they raise the money to do it, and or they do pro bono work, and or they get lawyers that want to have their day in the sun before the Supreme Court. So there's a little bit more behind these cases than just somebody that had a website,
Yeah.
So this LGBTQ, the Constitution's free speech protection, shields some businesses from being required to provide services, the same-sex couples is what they ruled. And the dissenting justice said it's a sad day for American constitutional law, I'm not sure if I went to a website and somebody was hostile to what I wanted in a cake, I don't even think I would order from them, to be honest with you. But
no, I wouldn't either. Me. But there's a point at which you go, look, in this country, and this is the reality, if you're going to open your doors for business, do you have the right to turn people away and discriminate against them? And on the individual level, you may go, well, maybe. But on the macro level, if we allow this to happen and it becomes systematic, because we've seen this in the past. I mean, it's not been that long ago that blacks had to carry a green book to find out where they could stay in hotels and where they could eat dinner. That isn't too far ago. This kind of stuff makes me think, again, I know this is a small thing, but it makes me go, if we're making discrimination okay, and this is okay, I guess, then... how far do we let it go?
Right. Because the web designers, I think they said that their religious beliefs lead them to regard same-sex marriage as false. So they're basically saying, due to their religious thoughts, that same-sex marriage is not legal, but it is legal.
Yeah, this is one of those things where I just don't get it. I'm sorry. You're not condoning. You're not participating. You're not doing it. You're simply putting images on a sheet. If you're making a cake, you're simply putting flour and milk and eggs together. This seems more punitive than it should be. And again, I fear that we're heading in a direction where, okay, it's at first it's going to be, the gay couple, and then it's going to be, name who's next. Fill in the blank other. That's my concern.
Well, for religious reasons also, there could be some religious thought that women should not have any particular type of role in, proceedings. So therefore, if a person, this female, wants some type of product or cake, maybe they could refuse them based on their religious convictions. I mean, this thing could go a lot of different directions.
Yeah, I know people with a lot of really, really curious religious beliefs. Do we really want to open that up to the general public?
Well, exactly. Right.
You know, believe what you want. Good on you. Within the confines of your four walls, you know, I got a buddy who years ago, he's one of those guys who reaches into boxes and picks up snakes. I would never do that. I don't understand it. I'm never going to understand it. But, you know, good for him. If that's what makes him feel good, he wants to put his hand in that box and pull that snake out, I'm 100% behind him doing that. But I don't want to have to put my hand in there and get bitten either. And the weird thing is, I asked him, have you ever been bitten? He goes, oh, yeah, a number of times. I go, well, then why aren't you dead? Well, we've got the anti-venom in back. And I'm going, now you've blown my mind because I don't get the whole exercise now.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Well, I mean, I'm not as afraid. I used to walk through a snake pit.
What?
Congress. I was in Congress. Weren't you waiting for that punchline?
I was waiting for it. I gave the right amount of pause before I said,
there
what?
There you go.
Thought we hit that.
Yeah, there we go.
So where does this go from here, do you think? I mean, we've got these decisions. You're right. There hasn't been the same kind of fervor that you saw with Roe, because I think everybody was expecting it. Roe was kind of a surprise. Everyone was thinking, and I was in the school of thought that they were going to death of 1,000 paper cuts, Roe. But they went, they did the full Monty. But I think everybody was prepared for this now. Where does this stuff now go, do you think?
Well, it's not going to go anywhere as far as what happened with same-sex marriage in the vote where, you know, Republicans in the House gave votes to codify that, and then it went to the Senate. That I don't see that happening here.
Yeah.
One, for a couple reasons. The cake web designer, although people may not like that ruling, I just don't see that rising to the level where there's a real push like same-sex marriage codification after Roe v. Wade occurred in the I don't see that out there, you know, for the designer and the religious side and the LGBTQ. I don't see it.
But do you do you look at the court as I am looking at it right now, is that there's nothing sacred, there's nothing decided.
Oh, right. That, it's all up for grabs. I'm just saying, where does it go, like, with Congress, you know, reacting and actually doing something? I see it going nowhere on these things.
Yeah,
you know, it did on same-sex marriage, but I don't see it going anywhere on these particular issues. And yes, I would say for the court, a lot of things are, you know, are up for grabs, and whole quote states' rights or, you know, religious rights. I think a lot's up for grabs.
Any fear of theocratic rule? There were a couple of religious decisions came out that you know, the postal worker, that I didn't talk about at all this week, who, it was a 9-0 decision, actually, that said that, you know what, that postal worker, you know, on Sundays, you know, the company's going to have to, you know, the postal service is going to have to make accommodations to get him to church. And now that this is the rule of the law of the land, the rule of the law, they're going to be, I think, a lot of people claiming to be very religious to get Sundays off.
Well, that one too. I mean, look, if they have made this decision about the United States Postal Service, what about the private sector?
Yeah.
What about it? And frankly, you know, for some people, of course, you know, the Sabbath, it's not a Sunday thing. You can claim a lot of stuff religiously. Growing a beard. In certain cases, within a company, if you can't have a beard, you can claim, if you're a Christian, a certain sect of religion, also that you have the right to grow a beard when somebody else doesn't. So there's all kinds of implications down the road. You're going to have, what, different crews of people with 5-6 different days off? You know,
let the fun begin. Bob, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff, man.
Thank you, Rick.
Let the fun begin. Seriously, once you let the religion out of the bottle, oh boy. Gonna take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around.
Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1998. If you were trying to drive to work on that Tuesday morning in Midtown Manhattan, you were probably late. 40,000 construction workers took to the streets in a massive protest. They shut down more than 200 building projects. They were rallying against the use of non-union labor. The New York Daily News declared Midtown shutdown and pending projects hammered by protests. The New York Post's front page headline was Midtown Mayhem. The protest snarled traffic outside of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority on Madison Avenue. The MTA had awarded a $33 million contract to build a subway command center to a non-union employer, Roy K. Incorporated. The construction workers chose to hold their demonstration during rush hour to make the most impact. One organizer explained, "We wanted to make the biggest statement possible." The workers chanted, "What do we want? Union! When do we want it? Now!" Some of the protesters decided to march to the job site. At 10th Avenue, they were met by police in riot gear and police on horseback. One protester estimated that there were 2,000 police officers, including snipers on rooftops. Up to that point, the protest had been relatively peaceful. But then the police demanded the protesters disperse and began to spray mace into the crowd of construction workers and supporters. One protester was kicked in the head by a horse. Numerous police and protesters went to the hospital for injuries and exposure to the police mace. 38 people were rounded up and arrested. After the protest, small pickets against the MTA project continued. But the non-union contractor, who had the power of New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani's police force to back them up, would not be moved. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I got to go back to CJ from Madison did ask a question. And look, I'm discriminating against CJ because I can. Evidently, discrimination is legal. I will discriminate against him because of my religious beliefs, which means I will not allow my daughter to bake him a cake, my son to build him a website. None of that. You will get nothing because I can now. I have arbitrarily decided, thanks to our Supreme Court, to discriminate against CJ from Madison, who did ask the question, should someone who took out a student loan have it paid for by someone else? Loan forgiveness. And the answer is, no, I don't think so. And I've never said that there should be loan forgiveness. My position has always been, right from the start, that we should do what FDR did with home ownership. Create a sub-entity of the government. Back then, they used the Home Ownership Loan Corporation to buy up all these mortgages that people couldn't pay, lowered the rates. They got, people got to stay in their homes. They paid back mortgages over a multi-year period of time. And at the end of the whole program, the government made a very small little tidy bit of profit, not a lot, but a little bit, and people got to stay in their homes. It seems to me that that is something that is workable. In knowing people who have big student loans, you look at the interest that they're socked with. You look at the fact that, sometimes they have to take breaks because they lost a job or something happens, and then come penalties and more interest on top of that. It's punitive. It's profit-driven, and we should change this. As Bob Ney said a moment ago, we've screwed over a generation. He didn't say this exactly, but when he was in college, you could work a minimum wage job and get through a public university. Good luck doing that today. We've saddled these kids and these folks with massive debt. Now, I've said that I don't think you can forgive it because of jealousy. You got people like CJ who clearly are going to be jealous of the fact that someone got something that he didn't get. And I know tons of people like this, which is why I have said if you borrowed $10,000, you pay $10,000 back. With maybe whatever interest to cover the cost of administering the loans. This is what our government should be moving forward doing. Buy up all those student loans. Take the profit motive out of it. If we want an educated workforce, educated populace, we should be making it easier to get college educations, not harder, and not putting your life in yourself in a lifetime of debt. It's insane. Are we going to do that? No, we're not going to do that. One side wants forgiveness. One side wants nothing. Punishment. You pay it back. And nobody is going to come to the center and think about, how do we actually solve a problem? How do we get something done? I think mine is the